Vloyri isi tzadik nezov. Okay. Pasuk kaf hey nar ha isi kam zakanti. Vloyri isi nezov zamach shav holchu Rabbi Yeshua Rabbi Eliezer ben Azaria. Rabbi Akiva. It sounds like a maisa from the Haggadah, right? They were traveling together. V'amdu al Pesach beisa shel Rabbi Doisa, and they stood by the entrance of Rabbi Doisa. Nichlus shivchasai amul Rabbi, and the shivchasai entered. Nichlus shivchasai amul Rabbi. Chachme Yisrael born etzlocha. So they knocked on the door, and they went to visit Rabbi Doisa. And Rabbi Doisa had a shifcha, and the shifcha said to Rabbi Doisa, "You have visitors. Please come to the front to be mekabel the visitors." Chachme Yisrael born etzlocha. Amar lo, he told the shifcha, "Yikonsu, let them enter." V'nichnesu. Tefasayil Rabbi Yeshua v'hashivu. Tefasayil Rabbi Yeshua v'hashivahu. Al mita shel zav, the shifcha tafsoi was in charge, and she grabbed him. That's what it seems like, and she put him on a mita shel zav. Rabbi Yoshua, Omar loy Rabbi Yoshua Rabbi Doisa, Rabbi, emor le sal mitcha acher v'yeshev. Okay, I guess maybe when it says over here that she grabbed him, l'chore, who grabbed who? L'chore means tafsoi doesn't say necessarily who grabbed who. Was it the maid?
Had him sit on the couch?
Or does it mean that, you know, I was Rebbe, and already in Beis Midrash, I remember we went to the Rebbe for a mesiba, and there was a certain boy that was not behaving, so the Rebbetzin grabbed him. The Rebbetzin grabbed him, and did with him what she wanted, put him where she wanted.
Put him in his place.
She wasn't shy to take control of the situation with her bare hands. So he said to him, "Why are you only telling me to sit down? What about the other? What about Rabbi Eliezer and Azariah and Rabbi Akiva? Why are you only telling me to sit down?" Who is this other person you're referring to? Rabbi Doisa said to Rabbi Yeshua, "Who are these other people over here?" So he said to him, "Rabbi Eliezer and Azariah." What? You're telling me this person over here is Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah? I remember Azariah from my youth. I cannot believe that Azariah has a child. Cannot possibly be. Why? Because I guess Azariah was very poor. Okay, I don't know this. We learned this not that long ago in Yivam. It's only about three, four months ago. And I don't remember this. And he says over here, I don't remember the Gemara. Unfortunately, I didn't look it up. But he's saying over here is that really that Azariah appears to be to have been in a difficult situation. It seems a desperate situation, and yet he was shocked. Wow, this is Azariah's child. It's amazing that it goes to show that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, he runs the world. People that you think would never survive, would never see the light of day, not only are they around, their children, their grandchildren, their great-grandchildren, people who years ago were literally destitute. Their children now are controlling the world there. They everyone comes to bow down. There's a certain very wealthy person in this neighborhood, and he gives enormous, enormous amounts of money to tzedakah. He supports Sefer Klal Yisrael. And his parents, literally, I mean, I heard it from them. I went to some of the simchas because I'm a distant relative through marriage to them, and the parents literally did not have what to eat. Came to America, and it's just amazing. It's amazing how, in one generation, a person can have nothing, and in the next generation, their children or grandchildren can have literally everything, and half the world is eating off their palm. And he says over here, look at that, Azariah.
The first thing you're thinking of, you lived on Mar Blanc, and they were praying Pashut people.
Which block?
55th Street.
In Borough Park. It could be. Maybe we'll talk privately. Probably.
And they was a praying Pashut people.
And he was a Talmud of Aaron in Lakewood?
Yeah, I don't remember.
Okay, so the person, I'll tell you later, it's no big deal because it's public knowledge and public, so I don't want to say, but it's public, that's not a, and I've heard, you know, whatever. Okay, let's go further. So therefore, Narho Yisig of Lord Yisig Tzadik Nezav Zar Makash Lochem, and okay, so this idea touches upon one of the interpretations of this pasuk, and that is HaKadosh Baruch Hu. I never saw that two generations. We never saw three generations where they're consistent in living in abject poverty. And although you do find in one generation maybe a person has absolutely nothing, but Hashkocha Pratis Kadosh Baruch Hu arranges things that a desperate state of poverty or whatever that may be is not forever. And although a person in his own lifetime may not merit, but his children or grandchildren, Chazal say that money is a gilgul, poverty, anios, is a gilgul, hachoyzer ba'olam. It goes around. In one generation, a person is very wealthy. In the next generation, that family is not necessarily on that same level. And that's what Chazal always says, that the person, when he is on in a very good situation, he should make sure that he gives a lot of tzedakah. A lot of cycles, so that when Rachmanu L'Tzlan, it's the way of the world. When the cycle goes the other way, which is a natural cycle, that his descendants should not be destitute. They should live with dignity, and you know, astronomical wealth doesn't last forever. But when a person finds himself in the other cycle, then his descendants should have dignity, not chas v'shalom have to be machzer on l'psachim. Next, Amar Rabbi Shmuel ben Nachmani, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Pasuk Zesar Malach Shel Ha'olam Moser B'Yadoi. Amoroi, this Pasuk was said by the Sar Shel Ha'olam. Who is the Sar Shel Ha'olam? Some say this referring to Michoel, the Malach Michoel. Nar Ha'isi, I was young, Gam Zokanti, Man Omre, who said this? Who is the one that can say I was a Nar and I was a Zokin? Moli Yukusha B'Richu, Miiko Zikna Kamei. Can you say that Kadosh Baruch Hu was a Zokin? You can't say Kadosh Baruch Hu Zokin. Now, the fact that so why didn't the Gemara say about Kadosh Baruch Hu, can you say about Hashem that he's a Nar? Is it a Pella? How come the Gemara only asked the question with regard to a Zikna? I don't know the answer.
Everybody starts off young. Getting old, you can go 100, 200, 300,
yeah, but by Hashem, the whole concept of young doesn't exist. The whole concept of Nar and Zokin. Nar and Zokin represents a concept of Zeman. Hashem is l'mayla min azman. Hashem is hoya hoy v'viyid. There's no such thing as time by Hashem. I don't know the answer. Amra, v'yelo David Amra, mi kashish kulahai. Was David so old? David would say, nar hoyisi gam zokanti. David lived to the age of 70. 70 is a baby today. Someone who's 70 years old still drinks from a sippy cup. Okay, 70 is nothing. Elo shma mino, that's the proof. That's what it means over here when it says this is Nar Ha'isi Gam Zakanti. The one that said this pasuk was the Sar Ha'olam Amoroi. This is a very fascinating term, the Sar Ha'olam. Rav Chaim Kanievsky, Zichat Sarag Levracha, I don't know where it comes from. They call him the Sar HaTorah. Who made it up? Where did that come from? Who made up that concept, that term, the Sar Ha'olam? Came the Lubavitch Rebbe, they call him the Nasi Hador. He himself spoke about it. He himself spoke about that there's something called the Nasi, there's something called the Nasi Hador, the Nasi. There's a Rebbe, okay? There's a Rav. Rav, I would say, is more in the Litvisha world. You have a Rav. Yesh li Rav. And then in the Hasidish world, there's a Rebbe, which really is a Rebbe. A Rebbe, a Rav, a Sar, and here we have a Nasi. I mentioned this in the Kinoi Santishra of the Asura Lugi Malchus, Arze Halavan and Adire HaTaira, Balei Tresen, the Mishnu Uvi Gemara. If you look there at that Akina very carefully, you notice there are many different titles. There is Rebbe, there's a Rav.
Melech.
What?
Melech.
He was in the Nasi. Who was a Melech? There were no Melech in the Bayi Sheni. It was a Nasi.
No. They say, who is the
Man Malkei Rabbanan. Man Malkei Rabbanan. Chazal say, who is the Melech? Man Malkei Rabbanan. Okay, but I don't think people call him a Melech. You don't find that terminology. But even in Akina, the time of the Bayi Sheni, look at all the terms. There was the Sofer.
Except for Mashiach.
Mashiach is the Melech HaMashiach. Okay, Mashiach is the Melech. That's that's in the future. You have all these different terms. There's a Sofer. There is a term of a Rav, Rebbe, Chosid, Okay, we have today, you know, a chacham in our generation, Rishon Litzion, the Rav Horoshi. All different terms that we have invented. Each term represents a different concept. And there's this new thing which I have no idea where it comes from. The Rav Chaim Kanievsky, Zichr Tzadik Livracha, is somehow this title that people have created. I don't know. We have to do some research. Who coined this term that everyone refers to him as the Sar HaTorah? I was listening to some shiurim on Tisha B'Av, and you know, this year Rav Chaim Kanievsky passed away. And it's that's what they do, these darshanim, they talk about the people who passed away this past year. And every single one of them, without exception, they refer to Rav Chaim Kanievsky as the Sar HaTorah. Where does that term come from? Who coined?
We're constantly talking about titles that are invented.
Yeah.
Just another title.
Yeah, so who invented that title?
When was it started?
When was it coined? Okay, I'll tell you, Lubavitch, the Lubavitch Rebbe, he speaks about a term called the Nasi. There's a Nasi Hadar, even every generation, a Nasi Hadar. I'm not exactly all the details.
He referred to a Shver all the time, the
Nasi Dereinu. He called the Shver. He called the Shver the Riatz.
Okay.
The Nasi. And then his.
And
there's a consensus on who the Sar HaTorah is. It's a term that we've invented.
It's called the Nasi Hadar.
Because that's in the Smichus firm. That's in the Smichus firm. When you put the word Nasi with the word Dar, Nasi Hadar. But if you want to use the word by itself, it'll be the Nasi. The Nasi. I think it's just a grammatical. Grammatical form of when you put it with the word dar. I know, but we hear this very interesting. You want to talk about the sar in Chazal. The word sar is used in reference to this pasuk. Nar ha'yisi gam zakanti v'lo yisi tzadik nezav mi amoroi the sar ha'olam. Okay, so this is something which there's something over here. There's something significant over here. Because this is a famous Chazal, and the term Sar is used in reference to a Malach that spans all of time.
This particular one, but every one of the 70 nations has a Sar.
Its own Sar. Okay, you're saying there's who's under the shlid of HaKadosh Baruch Hu.
Right, but Michal.
Yeah, Michal is called the Sar Ha'olam.
Is the executive in charge of.
But in the context of this Chazal, the significance of being called the Sar Ha'olam is time. A being that spans time from the beginning of time to the end of time and has a different, unique perspective. When you see time from beginning to end, then you get to see things that an ordinary person does not get to see. There is something over here to that. Okay, let's go further. Next. Now we come to the next Chazal. Av zoicha labein binoy b'koyach b'oisher. A father's hashpa. A father has an influence over his children with regard to certain attributes. And one of them over here is noy, beauty. Koyach is strength. Oisher is wealth. How do you know that a father's mazel has influence to bestow upon his child wealth? So he's saying over here a very, very fascinating concept. Oyesher doesn't just mean a Yerusha. Oyesher means the ability and the success in making money. There are some people that are very talented, or I don't know if you want to say it's talent, they have a mazel where if they go to a tree outside in the street, and they give a knock on the tree, money comes out. There are people like that. It's an amazing thing. People have a koyach. Whatever they touch is gold. Whatever mishigas, any business they get involved in, it's a mamish a mazel. They're successful. And there are other people who are brilliant and they're geniuses and they have tremendous talent. And they go into business and they do everything right. They cannot make a dime. They lose every penny. Is a certain koyach. Hashem gives a certain every neshama a koyach. So the Gemara says that who gives, where does the koyach of a child to make money? So it says the father, not the mother. That's what it says. The father, it's the father's mazel that gives koyach to a child to be successful. And how do you know it? From this pasuk. Because this pasuk says, Nar ha'isi gamla v'loi ha'isi tzadik ne'ezov v'zaroi. So the assumption over here is that the zaroi, the tzadik, is a male. Why a male? That's what the Gemara over here seems to be saying, a male. V'zaroi b'vakesh lochem, that there is a hemshach, there is a connection in wealth, in financial success between the father and the zera. Next, borei Hashem cheloi. Hashem, Moshe gave this bracha to Yehuda, if I'm not mistaken. Who got the bracha? Borei Hashem chelo, ufal yodav tisem, chatz mosnaim, umislav min yukumun. No, that is to Yosef. Borei Hashem cheloi, ufal yodav tisem, chatz mosnaim. Okay, let's see this. Binachosim. The word chelo means wealth. Mikan amru roiv koyhanim shlevi. Maybe this is going to Levi. The bracha was given to Levi. Mikan amru roiv koyhanim ashidim heim. Mishum, period. Okay, this pasuk I think is going to a Levi, Sheva Levi. Roiv koyhanim are wealthy. Really? Roiv koyhanim. Koyhanim, Gemara says that koyhanim are poor. They do not. So that's not doesn't make you rich. You have to get handouts. You have to go to the machzor beis hagranos. You have to go to the granary and beg for a handout that someone should be kind and give you teruma. Okay, give you shuma. The greatest wealth is you make your own money. Yet it says here that roiv koyhanim are wealthy because of the bracha of boreich Hashem chiler mcholosim of the pasuk devarim lamed gimel yud aleph. Ramachol? It has to be Levi.
Levi, yeah.
Okay, it says this by Levi. Ulu Levi Omar. How does it go? Ulu Levi. Tumech v'urecho le'ish chasidecho asher nisiso b'maso t'rivei omeim rivo oimer li aviv limo lo'y risiv yesachav lo'y akir
v'banav lo'yada
ki shamu mishmetecho v'imrosech t'shmo borei chashem cheloi. Oh, so yeah, what's your year? What I skip here? Yeah? If you let me close my eyes and relax, I would say it by heart, I would know it. But I'm nervous in front of people. Yaru mishpatecha li Yaakov v'sarascha li Yisrael yasimu k'tar av yapecha v'choli alal mizbechecha borei Hashem cheloi ufa'al yodov tirtze mechatz mosnayim kamav misanov min yikumun. Okay, so that is Levi. Levi gets the bracha borei Hashem cheloi. And therefore, here we learn over here, mikanam rev koyhanim ashir, most kind of are wealthy. Okay, from this, the bracha goes all the way back to Moshe Rabbeinu. Is that really true? It's shocking that it's true, because Koyhanim are the ones, Ein Lohem Chelek. We had already two weeks in a row, to two parashos in a row, where it says pretty much the same thing. They have no Chelek in Eretz Yisrael. Hashem hu nachalosoi. Hashem is Sulefa. Where do they get Parnas? Who supports them? They don't get land. But by the time of Chazal, it was an agricultural society. It was an agricultural society. If you don't have land, you're in a lot of trouble. Today, you'll say that today it's not agricultural. It's a service-oriented society. It's commodities. I don't know. It's a bracha. The answer is it doesn't make a difference. You have siyata d'shmaya, you'll have parnasa. If Levi was given the bracha, Borech Hashem Cheloi, may Hashem bless his wealth, his assets, that is a bracha, siyata d'shmaya, down to every last descendant that they are wealthy. Roiv Koyhanim Ashirim Heim Mishum Abu Hurdis Amru Harehu Omer. How do you know this? Another pasuk. Nar Hoyisi Gam Zokanti V'loy Risi Tzadik Nezav Zam Rakesh Lochem Ze Zaroi Shel Aron. How do you know that? How does this Sifrei know that the pasuk V'loy Risi Tzadik Nezav Aron Mila Shemilai? We're calling Aron and Shevet Levi. We're calling them the tzaddik. Why are they called the tzaddik? They did not participate in the chet or egel. That's why Shevet Levi, all of the shvatim, which one can we call the tzaddik? Shevet Levi. Why Shevet Levi? Because Shevet Levi did not participate in the chet or egel, and therefore they are called a tribe of tzaddikim, and it is to them that the pasuk that we learned over here in this today, Nar Hayisi Gam Zokanti, the loyroi isi tzadik ne'ezav v'zaroi mevakesh lochem. To be oymed in the nisayon of a tzadik. And let's use that as a springboard to discuss a very interesting concept of really who in Tanakh do we call a tzaddik? We call two of the Shvatim a tzaddik. We call Yosef a tzaddik. Who else we call a tzaddik?
Yosef.
The Gemara here is saying that the one that's called a tzaddik is Levi. Levi is a tzaddik. Chazal, but we refer to Yosef as Yosef HaTzadik. What? No. Shimon HaTzadik, where do you find Shimon HaTzadik?
Not the original
Shimon. Shimon was a vigilante. He went, he took out the whole city of Shechem. Which Shimon?
The later Shimon, he said.
The one that's buried in Yerushalayim, Shimon HaTzadik. Kever Shimon HaTzadik.
The Kever of Shimon HaTzadik? Which Shimon HaTzadik? I'm lost.
The
Tanu. Rash? Tanu? What?
One of the Zugos.
Why was he called Shimon HaTzadik? I don't know. I don't know. Generally, what makes a person a tzaddik?
If we go by the popular song, everybody's a
tzaddik. V'amech kulam tzaddikim. V'amech kulam tzaddikim li'olam yirshu aretz. What entitles a person to the title of tzaddik? So the answer is, we study Yosef. There are two things. Okay, there are basically two things you need to be a tzaddik. There are two main attributes of Yosef. Number one, he was the mashpir. He supported people. The provider. A person who is a provider earns the title of a tzaddik. Number two, a person that is oimed in a nisoyon, especially the nisoyon of noshim, of engaging in the of Arayos. Yosef was made in the Nisoyon of Eshes Potiphar, and that gave him the title of Yosef HaTzadik. You have a boy who's 17 years old, all alone in the country. There are no cameras, there are no recording devices. A country of Memtesh Shari Tumah, and all alone, no one would possibly know what he would do there. It wasn't like today where people are watching and everything you do, every keystroke is being recorded somewhere. Total privacy in the world. No one knows it was watching. And a 17-year-old boy whose hormones are on overdrive and was able to be oimed in the nisayon of Eshes Potiphar, it's beyond belief. It's lamala miderech hateva. And that koyach of Yira Shemayim is what gave Yosef the title Tzaddik.
Except the Torah doesn't give him that title.
So where does it come from? Who gave him that title?
Chazal.
Okay, and he was the mashvir. He's a supporter.
That is in the Torah.
Provider. Okay, but the word mash doesn't mean tzaddik either. Those two attributes are unique to Yosef, and thus that gives him the title of Tzaddik. This Chazal tells us that Levi also has the title of Tzaddik. What was Levi? Levi was oimed in the nisoyon of Avodah Zarah. Now we can't appreciate that, but Chazal tells us that the nisoyon of Avodah Zarah is just as I lost my visitors online. The computer just went out.
Recording in progress.
Okay, something went wrong over here. Sorry about that. Something went down. The computer went down for a second. Okay, so Yosef is called over here, and Aaron, the Nisoyon of Avodah Zarah, of the Chet HaEgel, was overwhelming, and he was only that Nisoyon. Okay, let's go further. Okay, so let's take a look over here at I want to go see some, let's look at the... any other mafarshim we talk about? No, that's it. All right, there's really more to this, but unfortunately, Nar Hayisi. Let's just go look over here at the Radak. It's in the middle of the page. The Radak in the middle of the page says Nar Hayisi Kloy Mar Loy Bin Urai V'Loy Bizkunai Loy Reisi Tzadik Nezav Legamrei. We did this already. V'Loy Zaru Melishivakish Lechem Al Psachim. V'zarei habonim haketanim sheniach achrav lo ya'azeim hokel yisrach bezuchusay. Ad avopi sheyovay lechesroin ra, kumo sheyovay lerosha. Okay, that although it is a cycle in life, and nothing is forever, but yet the zuchus of the tzaddik will bring salvation to his children, that they will not be abandoned entirely. The Nezov.
Everybody is asking the same question. Never?
So they all in the Farshim, and they all say the same thing. It's legamri. That although it looks at a superficial view, it appears that the children of tzaddikim are abandoned. You do see that. You do see that it appears that the parents have nothing, the children have nothing. All the mepharshim here, they say it could have been a lot worse. Legamre. They all add that. Every one of the mepharshim adds that into the parish. I've never seen a tzaddik nezov legamri. V'loy zaru sheyevakesh lechem al hapsochem. And they should be reduced to such humiliation, to such a matzav where they have to literally go from door to door. I never saw that. I never saw such a thing. You'll tell me, well, meisim b'chol yom, people come knock on the door all the time. People come around. Listen, I don't know. It's really, it's challenging. V'zare habonim haketanim sheniach achrev lo yaazim b'kalis b'chshum z'chusay. Now, okay, the next line, the nezov, who sheyachsal lechem v'simla. We actually do this. Nezov means, it means clothing and food, the basic necessities of life. We learn from Yaakov Avinu, who is mispalel to Hashem, and he asked Hashem im yeh lekim modi v'nosan li lechem le'achol uveged lulbash. The basic necessities. Then I will v'hoy ha'ev na'azoy sasher samti ma'atzivo yeh beis ha'lokim, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu responded ki lo ye'ezovcha. So we see that the word ezovcha is related in that tefillah of Yaakov Avinu to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The word ne'ezov is connected to the request of bread and clothing. So when it says v'lo ye'ezovcha ne'ezov, a tzaddik Hashem guarantees will always have food and clothing. All right, this is obviously very challenging. What this means exactly, I do not know. Let's move ahead. Let's move ahead to new territory. We're now on page 338. 338, Pasuk Chaf Ches. Let's try to do the entire page. Ki Hashem Oyev Mishpat. Hashem has a love for Mishpat. This is the Inyan in the Yoyma. Melech HaMishpat. Ki Melech Oyev Tzedakah U'Mishpat. On the Yamim Narohim, on the Seresi Mei Teshuvah, we change the Nusach of the Shemoneh Esrei. Instead of saying Melech, a king, Ohev, Tzedakah U'Mishpat, Tzedakah and Mishpat, we say HaMelech HaMishpat, the Melech of Mishpat. Over here it says Ki Hashem Ohev Mishpat.
Yeah, so
okay, we have to see. V'lo Yazev Es Chasidav. Yes.
We practice Mishpat.
He loves when we practice Mishpat. But Hashem also... Okay.
He doesn't love himself. He loves what he loves is when we follow...
When we follow in his ways. Have a doy meloy. Okay, we'll see. Let's see. Let's run through a few psukim. We'll come back a little in the Farshim. Ki Hashem oyev Mishpat v'lo yazov es chas. Hashem does not abandon his chasidav, does not abandon his pious ones. Lo'olam nishmaru. Forever they are guarded. The question, where do you put the comma here in this pasuk? Let's read the whole pasuk anyway. We'll come back and learn again. V'zera rishoim nichras. This is in this mizmor, if you notice the list mizmor, there is a constant switch, contrast between the tzaddikim and the rishoim. You don't always do this. Over here it's pronounced, this vacillation between the contrast of these two. Pasuk of that, tzaddikim yirshu oretz, the tzaddikim Yirshu will possess, when we had this before, the Yishkinu Lo'ad Olecha. We have a new word for forever. There are many words in Tanakh that mean forever. There's Lo'olam, there is Netzach, Netzach Netzachim, and there's another word, Lo'olam Vo'ed. Okay, Ed. And here we have just the word Ad, Lo'ad Olecha, forever. Okay, we'll see further. Pi Tzaddik Yege Chochma, the mouth of the tzaddik Yege speaks. The word yege means to speak with wisdom. Mishpat, and his tongue speaks mishpat. Two words for speech, the word yege and the word tidaber, dibur. Next, Torah Salakav Beliboy, the laws of Hashem are in his heart. Lo simad ashurav, almost a play on the word. Lashon Nofel al HaLashon. In the previous pasuk, it said the word La'ad, referring to forever. And here it says Le'simad will not falter. He will not slip. Ashurav means his footsteps. Next, Sofer Rasha LaTzadik, the Rasha gazes. He looks at the tzaddik with envy or with hate or with an evil eye. He gazes latzadik towards the tzaddik. Umevakesh, what does he look at? Umevakesh lahami, so he wants to murder the tzaddik. Pasuk lamed gimel, Hashem lo yazen v'yod, Hashem will not allow the tzaddik, the rasha, will not abandon the rasha in the hands of the tzaddik in the hands of the rasha. The lo yarshienu bihishoftai, and he will not declare him wicked. Hashem will not declare him wicked bihishoftai in mishpat. In other words, in the mishpat of the rasha, when the rasha attempts to judge the tzaddik, Hashem will not allow that to happen. Okay, obviously, everything here needs a lot of explanation. And that's what we're going to do right now. Let's now go back to the Mitzvah stuff and try to do the entire page today. On page 338, I'm starting again with the Mitzvah stuff. Oyev Mishpat, Kodesh Baruch Hu, he loves Mishpat. What does this mean? So over here, we had over here a few people called out, and they mentioned, is the subject that a Kodesh Baruch Hu loves when we do Mishpat, or does a Kodesh Baruch Hu himself enjoy when Hashem does Mishpat? Who is the subject of the practitioner of Mishpat? Is it Hashem or is it man? So it says in the Mitzvot, L'shalem l'ish kigmuloi. According to the Mitzvot, the subject is Hashem. Hashem has a special pleasure when he executes Mishpat. According to the Mitzvot, we're now referring to man doing Mishpat. Hashem has special joy when he brings reward and punishment to give a person what he deserves. Mida keneged mida.
But here it's mainly punishment.
Velom yazoiv chasidav. It doesn't say that necessarily. It depends. It all really depends.
Because the tzaddik doesn't really get a reward in this world.
Okay. I mean, no, not, I mean.
So I think the focus is still on the Russia.
Okay, it could be the Ohev Mishpat L'shalem L'ish Kigmulai. Hashem has a special love when he exercises Mishpat to give man what he deserves. And Michal is saying, referring more on the wicked getting punishment. Lozeh, therefore, Lo Yazev Es Chasidav, he will not abandon his pious ones. V'yu Nishmodim, by the wicked. V'yiyu, therefore Hashem is going to guard them le'olam, aval zera rishaim yuchrisu, they will be cut off, kol echa lefi gimuloi, each one will get what they deserve. Pasuk Lamed Aleph, le'simad, the tzaddik will, his footsteps will not falter, le'zeh, therefore le'simad ashuraf. Pasuk Lamed Beis, tzoyfe mabit le'eroiv al hatzaddik, what is the tzoyfe? He's lying in ambush. He's waiting for a moment of vulnerability when he can rise up and take advantage of the situation. Mabit, he looks le'eroiv, to lay in ambush al hatzadik. Lamed gimel biyadoi biyad ha'rasha. Hashem will not allow the tzadik to fall into his hands. Bihi shoftoi kasher yi ha'rasha nishpat im hatzadik bedvar ha'alila, with regard to the crime. Shesham olav. So this means over here, so he's saying over here, like we said, is that who is the subject of his shoftai in this pasuk? According to the Mitzvot, it is the Rasha. The Rasha is acting as the judge, acting as the jury. There are situations where tzaddikim fall into the hand of Rasha'im. And the Rasha'im, they judge the tzaddikim, and they judge them lora. And this mizmor says Hashem will not allow this to happen, will not allow the tzaddik to be a victim of a corrupt mishpat of a rasha. Kasher yiyah, one more time, these are very powerful words. Kasher yiyah ha-rasha, nishpat im ha-tzaddik. When the rasha is nishpat, there is an act of judgment with the tzaddik, bidvar hu'alila, regarding a alila means a sin, an excuse to a situation where the Rosh is trying to bring harm, shesom olav, that Rosh has cast upon the tzaddik, lo yarshienu hamokam, Hashem will not allow this, Hashem will not allow the Rosh to declare the tzaddik guilty. Ki yoytzi lo or mishpat v'yetze zakai, the end will be that the tzaddik will come out innocent. Now, you'll read this and you'll tell me, what about history, the Dreyfus affair? Unfortunately, I can't cite for you a whole long list of all the different acts of injustice that Jews have suffered at the hands of the wicked. And a whole long list of events that have happened in the Maram Miramberg, the Maram Miramberg, okay, and how many times were there blood libels? You have a lot of bikkies. There's long Yankel Rosenbaum. There's a long list. The list goes on and on and on and on. So you'll say, you read this mizmah, you'll say, how can you say that HaKadosh Baruch Hu does not allow a tzaddik to be victim to corrupt mishpat of, how does Hashem not allow the tzaddik not to fall as a victim to the corrupt mishpat of the Rishoyim? Go study history. History will tell you otherwise. So, you know, tzorachin. Ani mamin be'emunah shleima. You have to always come on to emunah, and we live in a world of hester panim, and it's, we don't know how these things work, and the more you try to answer, the more you put your foot in your mouth. And the answer at the end of the day is you have to have emunah. That's the ultimate answer. All the answers of trying to explain, this mizmar obviously is an extremely difficult mizmar. Saying nar hoyisi gam zakanti veloyder isi tzadik nezov zarm vakesh lochem. Okay, it's very nice. We read what it says here in the Mefarshim. Hashem does not abandon, but you know, study history, and there are many situations where it's hard to understand. It's hard to appreciate what this means. And this pasuk over here is equally difficult, where it says here in this pasuk, Hashem lo yazvenu v'yodai. Hashem will not abandon a tzaddik in the hands of a rasha. How do you explain that in reference to the Holocaust? Over 6 million people were delivered into the hands of the Nazis, and they were brutally tortured and murdered. V'lo yarshienu bihi shoftoi, and the tzaddik will not be declared guilty when the rasha takes the tzaddik and puts him under in mishpat, and the mishpat is corrupt as can possibly be. It says here I have tocha, and the way the Mitzudas explains it's very, very clearly. The bishoftoi is when the wicked is judging him. Bihi shoftoi, the one that is sitting as a judge and executing mishpat are the rishoim, and they're using their power to bring pain and harm and suffering upon tzaddikim through legal means, corruption, utter corruption. Hashem will not allow this to happen. Okay, we need to have a lot of emunah to accept this. Okay, now let's see Rashi. Rashi says, "Pit tzaddik yeget tchila b'libay." The Mitzvahs didn't even really discuss this part, but Rashi picks up on this. "Pit tzaddik yeget tchila b'libay chokma lirois din." To witness the din shepaska taru lecholdava v'achakach l'shoyin tadaber mishpat. Rashi's taking this pasuk seemingly out of context, but he's saying more of a general concept. The word yege. What does the word yege mean? Yege, many places in Tanakh, means to speak, but it appears, according to Rashi, it means to think in mental speech.
To meditate.
No, yeah, this is something you need to speak to a big. A psychologist, maybe a psychiatrist, can also deal with this thing. When a person, let's use this terminology. What language do you think in? When a person thinks, what language? Are you thinking in English? Are you thinking in Hebrew? Meir, what are you thinking? Meir talks a fluent Hebrew. But I think Meir thinks in English. What are you thinking? What are you thinking? What? In Italian? French? What language, really? What language are you thinking? English, right? You're an American. You can't fool me. You think in English. You may speak a fluent Hebrew, but you are thinking in English. Correct?
My brother told me, after he moved to Israel many years ago, he knew he was totally integrated when he started dreaming in Hebrew.
Dreaming. It's not a riot. What is he thinking? What is he thinking? What language does he think? Okay, he may dream in Hebrew.
He thinks in Hebrew during the day, because that's, maybe that's a force.
Okay.
But when he dreams,
no, that's not
in Hebrew,
force.
He said, that meant it was all natural.
There are many people that will tell you that they are thinking. I was once somewhere, and there's a person speaking Yiddish, fluent Yiddish, and this person said to me, he's thinking in English. He speaks a fluent Yiddish, everything is fine and good, but I can tell from his Yiddish, because this person knew Yiddish they lived and breathed Yiddish. And this person, I think it was like made by even by the Sima Shas, there was some event, and the person was speaking a very flowery, fluent Yiddish. But this person that says to me, he sounds good, right? He sounds like he knows Yiddish very well. No, he doesn't. He's off on a few things. He's off. You know why he's off? Because I can tell that he's thinking in English and translating into Yiddish as he speaks. He's getting up in front of 90,000 people, and he's speaking in Yiddish, but the Yiddish that's coming out of his mouth is a translation of the thoughts in his mind that are in English. That's an incredible statement.
I don't know.
What?
My father once told me he was able to think in a foreign language.
He must have been extremely brilliant.
He taught languages.
Okay.
And he was on a program for French teachers in France, and he told me he could think in French.
Okay, that's a different story. Okay, that very exceptional. That's very exceptional. Most people, I can't tell you most, I don't know what goes on people's minds. My impression is that most people, when they're brought up, they're brought up with a primary language, and that primary language remains with them their entire life regarding their thought process. Now, let's put that aside for a second. There are certain things in life that you do, you don't think. It's not a matter of saying words in your mind, and it's just concepts. Okay, there was a lot of language in pictures. In the ancient times, they didn't necessarily have words. They had pictures. Even today, you know, it used to be in the olden days when you went across the street, it said, don't walk. Remember those days? It wasn't so long ago. There were signs, you cross the street, and it says walk. And then when you're not supposed to walk, it says don't walk.
Or even speaking.
Okay, there were words. All of a sudden, no more words. No more words. It's racist. It's racist to go have words because what about the people who don't know how to read? So now they have to have a hand. They have a hand, a symbol, stop. Okay? And then to walk, they have a picture, an image of a person walking. Wow, that's a lower level. That's a very sad thing. Because it's you're caving into a lack of sophistication. It's a much more mature and sophisticated world when there are words. You're dumbing down the whole world. When it says don't walk, those are words. Those are letters. That requires the mind to actually process information and read. When you have an image, there's a lot less work that needs to be done. Online, I'm showing your smartphone and the computers in the user interface. Okay, in an interactive user interface, in everything is a picture. If everything is an icon, everything is a symbol. There's a symbol for Wi-Fi. There's a symbol for Ethernet. There's a symbol. Like I'm looking over here by the computer over here. Everything over here, there are symbols. On the bottom right of my screen is a cloud. What's that cloud for? I don't know. Then there's a microphone icon, and I see a Wi-Fi icon, and I see a sound icon that the sound is on, and then I see the battery icon, And then it shows that it's raining. It shows me an umbrella on the bottom of the screen.
I suppose an image is worth a thousand words.
Ah, so this, and then on the whole bottom of all the icons, so every app, every program for Chrome and for Edge and for Zoom and for Search, there's a magnifying glass. Everything today in computers, if you notice, in computers, everything, b'liyotzei min haklal, is an icon. Why? Obviously, the mind, when it sees an icon, it's automatic. It just seeps in. It's, there's wifi. If it would say wifi, there's a barrier. There are letters, and those letters now have to be interpreted. What does that mean? Now I understand what it means. By presenting an icon, you remove a step of the processing. Why am I discussing this? Because here we have in the pasuk, Pi tzadik yegeh chokhma ulishonoi tedaber mishpat. What does it mean the word yegeh, and what does it mean the word tedaber? What is yegeh? Yegeh, many places, means to speak. So why doesn't it just say tedaber? So it seems from Rashi that you think in words. You think. When you're going through a concept in your mind, you're thinking and you're speaking to yourself. Should I say this? Should I make this argument? Should I make another argument? Is this correct? Is it not correct? When a person is in thought, he's having a conversation in his mind, and there are words, there is dialogue, there is expression, there's a vocabulary. It's no different than actually speaking to a person with your mouth, your palate, and sound coming out. The only difference is that nothing comes out. It's all in the mind. The mind is having a conversation. But there's another type of communication that goes on in the mind, and that is what I'll call the icon communication, where you don't need in your mind to actually say the words. It's just like when you look at the screen and you see an icon, it automatically means something. There's no conversation.
Once you've memorized it.
Once it means something to you. So my question to you is, when it says here the word yege, is yege mean mamish words? Your mind, you're actually articulating complete sentences and having a conversation between the multiple dimensions, in your mind there's a Sanhedrin. There are 70 different people in your mind, and you're having a conversation, and there are actual words being discussed in your mind amongst all the different dimensions of your mind. Is that what the word yege means? Or does the word yege mean that in your mind there are certain concepts that have been etched into your psyche like icons? The same when you look at a screen, you go on the street and you see a green light. A green light? You go. I don't need someone. You don't need someone to say a sign. You are permitted now to proceed and move ahead. And when there's a red light, so you don't need the green light. It is a symbol which automatically represents a sentence. Is that what the word yege means, or does the word yege means it's like a sign that's giving you very precise instructions? The word yege ordinarily means dibur. Look back in Rashi. Well, Rashi.
By the way, Rashi means here that there is no achat b'peh achat b'lev. Whatever yesh lo b'lev, he talks. In a pitzadi yege chokhmah, because he has the chokhmat b'lev, the chokhmat Torah. Therefore, he talks Torah. We shall not adam mishpat, because there is no. He thinks one thing and he talks about something else.
But look. Let's read the words of Rashi more carefully. Okay. But look. Rashi adds some very important words. Rashi is pi tzadik yege. The word yege is a very hard word to translate. It normally means.
That's the dibur matzil. Pi tzadik yege. What?
So in the lathe, in the lathe, okay, in the lathe, in the lathe there is yege. In the lathe, in the heart, techila biliboy. It says the pi tzadik, Rashi's struggling here, obviously. The pi tzadik yege chochma. What's the pi? What peh? What peh are we referring to? So he writes, techila, it means the physical peh? Is that what it means?
Why not? Because
so why does Rashi say techila bilibo? The word.
Pitzadiki again. We daber. What? What's the process? Techila bilibo chokma. Lirod din shepaskat Torah lechol davar. Ve'achar kach we daber. He's not going to talk before he thinks what the Torah means about that subject, whatever the subject is. This was what Rashi says here.
Okay.
I don't know what it means,
but it almost sounds like that the heart has a peh. I know you put a comma, you wanted to break it up. P, there's a deeper hamasl. P, tzadik, but you said the word P means at the end. Soif ma'isav ha'machshava t'chila. The end is the tzadik's going to give out. You want to rearrange the words of the pasuk, which is fine, we do that all the time. The P and the Lashon will ultimately speak, but before you get to the actual words coming out of the mouth, there's going to be a process of thought, a process of yege in the lathe. Okay, that could be very well. I love to do that, to go slice and dice the pasuk and rearrange all the words. But for some reason in this pasuk, the fact that Rashi puts this expression together, I don't have no idea. We have to look over for Hashem. Seems to be saying that this possible and possible is that there is a peh in the heart. And just like in the physical body, the body articulates with the palate, the tongue, words, there is a conversation taking place in the mind. There are words, there are sentences.
Rashi says, Libi Omerli.
Libi Omerli.
Many times he uses this language. Rashi, Libi Omerli Shekacha Perush. You know, sometimes it comes from his heart and then he talks.
So look at on the side, the Sivsei Zakenim cites in the beginning of the Sefer, he says, Kol higoyon shabat Torah balev. That's not where that's balev. The word higoyon is in the heart. Again, our dilemma is when it says the word higoyon, does that mean there's a conversation of complete sentences, or does that mean there are certain like icons? The same way when you see different icons, it automatically has meaning to you. There is a process of thought and concepts that are floating in the mind and which ultimately make their way into a deeper, or whatever it is. The word, it's an interesting pasuk. Okay, we'll leave with that for now. Uvehem nege yoimam. So according to Rashi, nege means to meditate in the mind. Not dibur. There's a difference between dibur and yege and hege. Dibur is physical. It's physical. It's the lashon, but there's a peh also here in this pasuk.
No, but the P is not part of the lashon. The P is where it's going to be formulated with the heart, and then the lashon or the tongue and the dibur is it's going to come out.
Okay, so that's what I wanted to say. Is there a P in the heart? Is there?
No, your physical mouth is using what's in the heart, and it's. And
okay, that's what I'm commonly saying. That is our dilemma. Let us clarify our dilemma. That's what Karl of Kalman is saying. Is over here in this pasuk, it says there's a P and there's a Lashon.
What does Targum say? I don't understand.
Targum, good, excellent question. Targum, Puma de Tzadika. The Puma de Tzadika, Ronein, it sings with Chuchmisa, with wisdom. The mouth of the Tzadik sings with wisdom, Velishonei, and his tongue, Mimalala Dina, it speaks with justice. According to the Targum seems to be saying is Yege, if I'm not mistaken, Ronain, I don't know what Ronain means. I thought Ronain was
in Shur, I think it's formulates, contemplates the chacham.
It seems there are two
and
different.
What does that mean?
Speaks. Malo means to speak.
To speak?
To speak, for sure,
yeah.
To speak. According to the Targum, it seems there are two completely different concepts. There are two different things that are totally not related to each other that a tzaddik does. Number one, he speaks chokhmah. Okay? There are many talmidei chacham that can make beautiful pulpulim, but when you ask him a simple shayl halacha l'maisa, how do we paskin? What bracha do you make on a cup of coffee? I don't know. You can go and you can darsh and you can tell the most esoteric concepts. You can give a shir for 10 hours. But when it comes to practical halacha, that's not my thing. You know who's like that? Rav Chaim Soloveitchik could not pass on a shayla. The kenar Rav Chaim Soloveitchik, when they took him as Rav of Brisk, he says, I'll be the Rav, but I'm not going to be the Paisik. Today we think that what is a rabbi? What is the role of a rabbi? The rabbi is to answer questions. You have a question, so what do you do? That's what. So that's not necessarily what the rabbi of the.
So what the Gemara says, or Kaharim or
Sinai.
Sinai.
Okay. That has many. Meanings. But there are people that they excel in wisdom. They're philosophers, and they can break up. The Rav Chaim Soloveitchik could not paskin a simple shaila. That was his reputation. Why? So people argue about this. What's the reason why Reb Chaim could they had Reb Zelig, who was the Rav of Brisk? He was brutally murdered by the Nazis.
Rieger.
What was his first name?
Simcha
Rieger. He was the Rav. He was the Paisik. He was a tremendous Talmud Chacham. He was brutally murdered by the Nazis. Terrible what they did to him. And Reb Chaim was not the Paisik. Why? So they argue, there's a very big dilemma, why Reb Chaim was not able to paskin shailas. Some will tell you it was because he was so brilliant, he saw every possible side to a question. When you know too much, there's too much of a distraction. You know every opinion, you know every tzad, you go crazy, there's too much information, you have to be able to. And some will say, no, that's not the reason, because of the Yirah Shemayim. Really, he knew the psak halach. It's just there was a certain inborn fear, a yirah shemayim, of giving a psak halach. Even though he knew what the psak halach was, he was able to put away all the distractions, all the different sides. This is the halacha. It's a certain sense of yirah shemayim that just prevented him to. He saw the pischa shel gehenim psuchu lefanav to give a psak halacha. But Rav Chaim did not pass on shal. That was not his thing. His thing was lundis. It was not piske halacha. So, according to the Targum, exactly. So, according to the Targum, it appears there are two completely separate concepts. Number one, a tzaddik pi chachma yege chachma. He talks of learning. It's no falpel and things that not nagi halacha lemaisa. You don't catch him. It's not nagi halacha lemaisa. There's no karbonis as man as it. You can say whatever you want to go say. There's not piske halacha. That's one thing. Mitzat sheni. When someone comes to ask him a psak halacha, when someone comes to bezdin, also a completely separate concept. Ula shaynai to daber mish, but it's poetic. This individual has mastered pilpul, chachma, and mitzad sheni, he has also mastered the art of decision making. Rashi doesn't say that. Rashi says this is one concept. This is a process. We're dealing here with mishpat, and the Talmud Chacham is being yored loimkoy shel davar. He goes to the source. He goes to the pasuk in the Torah. Then he goes to the Mishnah. He goes to the Gemara. He goes to the Achrayim, the Rishonim and Achrayim, until finally he reaches a conclusion. It's one continuous process. Rashi clearly learns that this pasuk is a process from the beginning to the end. He's going through the concepts. The Targum and probably other Mefarshim here learned that this pasuk is dealing with two completely different disciplines. There's a discipline of chokhma, of pilpul and chokhma, and an appreciation of the depth of the subject the one is discussing, and then there's a different discussion, a different topic, and that is psak halacha. It's like on Shofar, all the Sfarim, they say the same thing. There were Gedolei Yisrael that spent enormous amount of time learning all the secrets of what the Shofar is all about, all of the kavanis, all of
the Sisrei Torah associated with the blowing of the shofar. And when it came time to blow the shofar, what did they do? Nothing. They forgot everything. Tekiah, Shvarim Teruah, just blow the shofar. Blow the shofar. That's it. Forget about all the chachma. They're two completely separate inyanim. It is not a mila. It is not necessarily a mila to integrate the two together. It's not necessarily. Okay, there are different types of people, different types of mahalchim, Torah. But you see that many gedolei Yisrael, there's a zman of being yoyrei lo'oimkoi shel davar in what something represents, the concepts and the depth. And then there's a time, put that all aside. Right now, there's a mitzvah to blow shofar, to blow the shofar. There's a mitzvah to take lulav. Don't have all kavan, do all these strange things. Take the lulav, put everything aside, and shake, make a bracha, l'shem shemayim, and shake the lulav v'neshek, finished. And that's what the pasuk seems to be saying according to the opinion of the Targum. There is first, pi tzadik yege chochma, the peh, the physical peh of the tzaddik enjoys talking, actual deep, but not like Rashi, not in the heart. Speaking, the real peh, the physical peh, speaking in words of chachma. And then there's a second concept, a different discipline, and that is ulishoynoi tedaber mishpat. You have a job, I have a 9-to-5 job, I go to the RCA Besdin, I sit there, people come with shilas, people come with issues, and you paskin the halacha. And you just make a decision. V'zehu. Rashi, no. There's a one continuous process. Pi tzadik yegeh tchila b'liboi chachma. First, the heart is an issue. And the heart is now having a conversation. All of the person's dimensions, all there's a whole Sanhedrin inside a person's head. And they're being mefalpel. What is the halach in this case? And it's thinking and thinking and thinking, what should we do? We'll argue this side, that side, this way, that way. But at the end, lirois din shepaska taru l'chol davar v'yachar kach. And after you analyze and your heart weighs all the different stadim, okay, I have to reach a decision l'shoinai t'daber mishpat. We're trying to make here, like we do in the afternoon, a machlokes between the Targum and Rashi. Okay, that is the biggest hanah in the afternoon shir, to show there's a major machlokes between Targum and Rashi. This is not Unkelus, this is Targum, someone else, Targum Yosef. I think they call it Targum Yosef. We really don't even know who wrote this. No one seems to know who wrote the Targum Kesuvim. Targum Kesuvim is a mysterious Targum. Who is the author of Targum on Kesuvim? And on Nevi'im, there's only one Targum. This is Yonasan Ben Uziel. There's no Targum Unkelus. There's no Targum Yosef. There's only one Targum. I mean, there are other Targumim, but then they don't carry in the weight of Targum Yonasan Ben Uziel. Chumash, we have Targum Yonasan Ben Uziel, Targum Unkelus, Targum of Yerushalmi. Okay, that's an interesting. That's pretty much been lost. Most Pesukim, we don't even have that. It's been lost in Golus. And in Kesuvim, there's a new Targum called Targum Yosef. Who is Targum Yosef? This is, I think they call this time Targum Yosef, and it's a bit mysterious as to when it was written, who wrote it, and the weight. How much weight does it carry in understanding the Amita Shel Torah of what the pasuk means? Certainly carries a lot of weight. Let's make no mistake about it. It got into the Mikros Gedolos, but it doesn't seem to carry the weight of Targum Yonasan Ben Uziel and Unkelus. Certainly not Unkelus. Okay, let's look. What time is it now? Okay, oh, it's very. We have to stop over here. It's very, very late. Okay, so we're from tomorrow. We're going to go through the more farshim on these pesukim. All right, we'll do some in Yonei Rosh Hashanah after we return in a few moments.